What do you see? Look for the theme, the path of faith in the providence of God. As we look at Habakkuk, as you memorize, as you talk with others about it, that's where we're heading to. Wherever you are, don't apologize for where you're failing. Just start looking at it, talking about what you're hearing. But as you do it, humbly learn of God's providence in the face of injustice and seemingly silence and inconsistencies from God. Times of suffering. How will you do this? Well, the key is posture. Come before God honestly and humbly. You know what that means? If you're going to be honest, make sure your honesty has boundaries. It's not just a free-for-all when you're torn up with brokenness. Come seeking to submit to God's word. Make connections to your life with careful precision. If it's about God's providence, then you want to look and see, what do I learn about God? Then look for God. Look for God's values. Look for what he is doing. Look for what he is doing with them. If you're so overwhelmed with yourself or self-centered, you don't care what he's doing with them. You don't care who the them are. And then go to him from where you are, not from where you should be, but avoid, number three, the easy route of venting and taking apart. Sometimes we do that by just not paying attention to God's word. We just say, I'm cynical, I'm tired, it's all a mess. Come prepared to do the hard work to build up your faith. True faith grows in the struggle, in allowing the inadequacy of what you have to help you follow your thoughts to their roots, and then look again to God at what he has said and done. You need faith in someone that is greater than you. The process is messy, it takes work, and remember, you don't need to know all, you need to know that he knows all. So when your faith isn't in perfect understanding, you know, this whole, my life, my head is too full, everything's too much, I quit. No. That's not faith in God. And I'm telling myself as well as you. When your faith is not in perfect understanding, I can't move if I feel like it. When your faith is not in perfect understanding and in seeing how your situation is fixed or restored, then you have hope in God's trustworthy word and you have a plan that goes beyond your life. Then you are free to look for areas to meditate and worship. In the face of bewilderment, Habakkuk still has assumptions about the nature of God that sets him up to grow and to receive from God. In this context, Habakkuk brings his injustice before God. He says, I went to the right place. I went to you, God, with my injustice. There's no action. How long, O Lord, will I call for help and you will not hear? I cry out to you, violence, yet you do not save. Remember we said last week that this language is the language of lament. You see it in the Psalms. Look, why have you rejected us forever? Why does your anger smoke against the sheep of your pasture? And then individually, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart all the day? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord, and light my eyes, or I'll sleep the sleep of death. I'm trying to show this is normal. This whole thing of I can't be close to God when my soul is torn apart, that's not, the Bible doesn't show that. A part of faith, that's why we're calling the theme here, the path of faith in the providence of God includes lament. How long implies that you've been doing this for a long time. And he says, I don't think God is hears because there's no expected response. I cry out. Remember, that word means to shout. It roars within me. I scream because of distress or horror. It's the whole idea of one whose emotions of somebody who can't get away. Remember, I told you about King Zedekiah, who's going to come after Jehoiakim, then Jehoiachin, then Zedekiah. They slaughtered the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, then put out the eyes of Zedekiah. It's the horror of being forced to have to look at this. The emotion, I cry out to you. Look at Job. Behold, I cry violence, I get no answer. I shout for help, there's no justice. He has walled up my way so that I cannot pass. He has put darkness on my paths. How long will I call for help and you will not hear? I cry out to you, violence, yet you do not save. What brings this response from you before God? And here, it's violence. Society is falling apart. A couple sources define this violence as a flagrant violation of moral law by which man injures primarily his fellow man. Physical brutality is only one possible expression. So remember Jehoiakim, ruthless, merciless, cuts up the scroll, threatens the lives of Baruch and Jeremiah. Remember, he's the only king mentioned who killed one of the prophets. Remember Uriah and running to Egypt. They found him, killed him. Ruthless, merciless. Don't romanticize the job of representing God. Jeremiah and Habakkuk have a tough job to obey. I cry out to you, violence, 6 times in this book. It's here, it's in verse 3, it's in verse 9, it's in 2 verse 8, it's in 2 verse 17, 2 times. I cry out, violence is testing Habakkuk's faith. As Baker comments, Habakkuk's theological understanding of God, what he said he believed about God as just and righteous. He says, I know you are just and righteous. I know you are holy. His theological understanding of God is not matched by his experience of God. I call out to you and you will not hear. Amerding says, failure to act calls into question the righteousness of either the petitioner or the one addressed. Habakkuk, is it me? Is it you? This, if you are righteous, then there should be a response. Well, what happens to our prayer life? What fights against it in the face of these questions? You said a pile of things, including, some of these are worth looking at. You said, in the face of these questions, what happens to our prayer life? Irreverence creeps in. You know what that means? There's little respect. It means you're sloppy. You stop living and praying inside of God's words. Other words speak louder. You're irreverent, right? Trying. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but to try to get my family to talk to one another during our meals. I've told them the food talk goes under the conversation. You have the pleasure of being with these people. So the pasta potatoes, say that quietly. Figure out a way to not kill the conversation with the food talk. There's something bigger. And if we have nothing to say, we're not appreciating the people there or the life that God has given us. We show irreverence when we're not able to go to him in prayer. We stop living and praying inside of God's words. We're inconsistent. I went up and the lack of perseverance with specific prayers. Discouragement grows. Now go back down. God's will becomes vague and uncertain. Therefore, we lack confidence in prayer. You're not very confident before him. Take things into your own hands. It's so large, God's not doing anything. And then remember this one, our suffering becomes our righteousness. You feel justified because you're under a lot of pressure. So everybody needs to back off. Because everybody else says you're doing more than you should have to do in this situation. What happens to your prayer life? Well, what would that reveal about our relationship with God? And you said a bunch of things there too, but I'll move on. It's surprising for how much we talk about God, how quickly we stop crying to him. Do you ever cry to God? Do you ever cry to God in the way that he said, I shout my soul in distress? Do you ever cry out to God that way and do you stay there? It's easier to complain about God than to talk to him. So there's many wrong responses. Some of them we mentioned up there of what we do instead of praying. But then we said, all right, let's look at a positive one here, Luke 18. And this is what you're going to start talking about, all right? He was telling them a parable, showing them at all times. I'll ring it quickly because we did it last week, all right? They ought to pray and not lose heart. In a certain city, there was a judge who did not fear God, did not respect man. There was a widow in that city. She kept coming to him saying, give me legal protection for my opponent. For a while, he was unwilling. But afterward, he said to himself, even though I do not fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow bothers me, I will give her legal protection. Otherwise, by continually coming, she'll wear me out. The Lord said, hear what the unrighteous judge said. Now will not God bring about justice for his elect who cry to him day and night? And will he delay long over them? I tell you that he will bring about justice for them quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? Now just look here quickly at the question. I'm going to go back. How would you sum up Luke 18's call to prayer? Can you see any parallels with the situation in Habakkuk? Go write them on that other slide there, Ellie. Look at this. No. Not on that one. But you're going to... No. Hang on. You're going to write on that one right there. Okay? There you go. Okay. Look at that. Sum up where this prayer lives. Where does this prayer live in here? If you see any parallels with Habakkuk, great. But just look inside this passage. What accompanies prayer inside of here? What surrounds prayer in here? What do you learn about prayer inside of here? Give me what you think. Cindy?
Working and the waiting is in confidence in what we know about God, that he's looking for people with faith.
Is working when seems he's not. Anne?
Well, definitely perseverance.
Yes.
Especially the woman. And then when Jesus says it there at the end that I tell you... Wait, am I reading that right?
Yeah.
I tell you that he will bring about justice for them quickly.
Yeah.
So the perseverance might seem long on our part.
Right.
However, for him, it will come about in his timing.
Yes. Letting him define the timing. Letting him define the timing. What else you got? Where is it? All right, pile down right down this row. 1, 2, 3. Pastor, go ahead.
If you know your God, prayer should keep you from discouragement.
Okay, Mom?
You really believe what you're thinking, and so you are going to persevere. That could have been what was said before, but also... I put it with both Habakkuk and today's world, that as we have our foundation in Christ, and even the way the world's so turned upside down, we can still pray for souls to come to Christ. We have things to pray for and can persevere, keep asking.
Fine. But you're editorializing, all right? Tell me here, what do you learn about where prayer lives in here? All right? This is not a talk about prayer. I don't care about prayer. I care about where prayer lives in here, in this passage. Jody.
Well, she seemed to be convinced of what she was asking for. Like she kept asking rather than saying, okay, God hasn't answered me yet, so maybe it's the wrong thing. She seemed to be, in this parallel or parable, she seemed to be convinced that she was asking for the right thing. Also, boy, I kind of lost my train of thought by your last exhortation.
No, I know. I'm sorry.
But I think it was that that how much more God will, you know, the comparison between this judge who did not fear God, but how much more will God?
Okay, all right. Remember what Tim said weeks ago when he was saying, if we're not careful, what is our posture when we come to doubts and seeming injustice in the silence of God? If we're not careful, we quickly put God in the docket, like, you better answer for yourself here, because this isn't right. She's saying in the face of that, there's a certainty about what she's asking for, right? A certainty about what she's asking for. And then you combine what my mom and dad were saying about who is this one you're believing in, all right? She realizes she has to get through the judge. The judge is the place you got. There's no other place I got to go. So she keeps going back to the place she's supposed to go. Well, then they're both saying, you keep going back to the place where you're supposed to go, because if this rotten judge is going to turn, you dummies, how much more will God? Do you hear what she's saying? And you can hear the snake, stone, you know, bread thing from Matthew, right? Look at us. And I'm talking to myself, too. I glue myself into dummies, okay? Convinced about what asking for and confident, asking, right person, okay, and then I'll just put how much more. How much more God. How much more God, dot, dot, dot. Okay, where is it, Nicole?
You asked where prayer is, and it was crying out day and night. So
yeah,
I think it is a common thing for us. Like, I prayed it, and I prayed it. Do I have to keep asking for the same thing over and over again? But I think it is just that attitude of prayer that we lack. It's our minds wander. We're thinking of other things. We have lives to live. And so we're not in a constant attitude of prayer.
Prayer. Prayer, front, center. Okay? It's right here. If prayer, front and center in mind. And this is where mom's going. Where she's going, well, there's plenty of other things to pray for. It's like, yeah, no. But right yet, she's right. She's right. But then when in the attitude of prayer, the line of communication, who do you talk to? The thing isn't textless. It's a thing of, like, you know, if you're texting them that much, can you at least match that with what's going up towards heaven? With what's going toward heaven, and do you believe that there's more to be found by going to heaven than by going to her or him or them or to yourself? I just need to think about, yeah, fine. In this passage, okay, prayer's front and center in relationship, in emotion. Okay, catch the, Jim's got it.
It's coming from the book I'm reading.
Yeah.
When we first encountered Habakkuk, I thought it seemed like he was angry at God.
Yeah.
But to find out as we went through the lessons of this that he was angry with God.
Yes.
Because of the sin that was going on.
Yes.
With his people.
Yes.
So he's finding out the only hope he has is if with God instead of looking horizontal to somebody of his own hope of whatever he can fix himself.
Comes. Justice always comes finally from God. You know, sometimes we need to stand up and do our part. You're in a time where everybody's looking for justice now. We do need to do more, but be careful, right? You carry this out in your home or with the people that you're with throughout the day. If you don't get justice, you take justice, right? No, that's where vengeance is mine, I'll repay. That doesn't mean you don't have a place in bringing about justice. But in this prayer situation, that you're going to God for the justice. That's what Habakkuk's doing, right? To God, whatever else he's going to do and say. And then that's why I brought up Uriah. He dies for it, right? Jeremiah, go study him and see what he goes through. Habakkuk's not doing nothing but pray. But this prayer is part of the wrestling for him to have faith in God as he calls others to have faith in God. Going to God for final justice. Where is it? Where is it? Over there, Stango.
The call to faith. Today I heard a comment that as a teacher or public speaker, the main point is the largest main point is usually reserved for the last one.
Fine.
And here with what Jesus is talking about, he sets up all the things about God, but then there's a sharp contrast with the last one that's a really harsh challenge in one sense about if you know all this about God, even despite this, why aren't you using it?
Right. Remember how it ended? When he comes back, will he find faith? Okay? Will he find faith? He's defining faith by that. See, this should catch us all in the net, right? Should catch us all in the net. Not to make you run around and say there's no hope and you're doing everything wrong, but that's what he's calling. He's saying, this is how the righteous will pray. So that's what we encourage one another. We say, this is how we pray. Come on, one another. Here, our relationship with God is paramount as we go to God for justice, for final justice, for understanding of, back to the end said, the timetable of justice. How do I live in the face of this injustice. Okay? So how would you sum it up? Key component of faith. Okay? Describes key component of faith. That's what you saw in here. Was there somebody else? And then I'm going to go. Okay. It calls for perseverance in prayer in the face of injustice and indifference. The judge is it's like, I don't care. Calls for perseverance in prayer in the face of injustice and indifference. In the face of injustice and indifference. Bailey says, God is the friend of the honest doubter who dares to talk to God rather than about him. Learn to cry out to God. Learn to stay there as the only source. If you have any children, it's very hard to parent when your child is looking for an out. It's very hard to parent when your child is looking for an out. First, they look for it with the other parent. Then they team up with the other siblings. Then they look to their friends. Then they look to their friends' parents. Then they look to teachers. They look to anybody else but you. It doesn't mean you're right. It doesn't mean they should always, everything you're asking them to do is reasonable and right. I didn't say that. It's just very hard to parent when the child is looking for an out. It's the same at work. It's very hard. My kids, we constantly talk about Shady Maple. Why? I got six kids working over there, right? Six kids. So we hear all gossip over there about this one quit, this one got fired, this one they're disgusted with. This is what's going on over there. And it's like, do you guys care about the mission and purpose of Shady? Or are you just looking out for yourself? What would it even look like to head towards that mission? What would that be? The same at work. It's the same at church. I always cringe when I hear someone say, I've checked with three other pastors when they're not working through with us and they're not working through with you. It's the same with God. Stay with God and don't just jump to conclusions. You see this in chapter 2, the end of chapter 3. Part of the humble posture we need comes from remembering that we're not the only one asking the how long question. You're not the only one. Look at this. I'll get this right. Oh, I will get this right. We're going the wrong way. Ha. It came out on the seventh day that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. None what? Manna. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? Or how about this one? Only do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. The Lord said to Moses, how long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? And Jesus answered and said, you unbelieving and perverted generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring him here to me. Look at those verses. I'm not going to flip. My next one is a question, and the question is simply this. What should these how long passages do for us? You got to go answer on that next slide. Don't go there. I want them to look here. What should these how long passages do for us?
How we view God's help.
These should remind us that not let our circumstances dictate God's help. That's what came to Stan's mind. Jonathan?
Just a short answer.
Yeah.
We have to look first to ourselves before we blame God.
Say that again. I couldn't hear you.
We have to look at ourselves before we blame God. He's putting the responsibility on us and saying, wait, before you come at me and tell me to fix everything, you need to get what you're doing right.
Look at ourselves before blame God. Are we doing what we're supposed to be doing? What you got? Anything else? Yeah, go, Levi.
As you were reading them, I felt really convicted because I feel like a baby because I cry out to God about all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah, fair point. I'm not even listening to what you want me to do.
There it is. It's building on what Jonathan is saying. You hear that? It's you're crying out. I'm crying out how long? I'm crying it out to you and to everybody else. And I'm not even listening to the one that said, let there be light. As he's saying, how long will you not listen and do what I've called you to do? What else? See, the arrogance of voicing complaints loudly while refusing to listen. I love that Michael Card song, Will You Not Listen? I wish we had it recorded when the kids sang it years ago. They did amazing. That arrogance of voicing complaints loudly while refusing to listen, and obey God. Anybody else? Are we done? Nicole?
So the last one from Jesus saying, how long will I be with you? How long should I put up with you? It makes me think of with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh hardened his heart, and his heart, and God hardened his heart. And the thing that there is a clock ticking. God will say enough at some point.
There's limited time. Back to that thing about, are we putting God in the docket? You realize, okay, God, I've waited. Okay, God, I've waited. And God goes, okay, I'm waiting. Whose time going off is the bigger deal? That's what I feel when I listen to this. Is there anybody else? Or is it Olga?
I think just looking at all these verses, and God gave us enough evidence to trust him, and we still like looking for something because it says all the signs which I performed, and also Jesus also was mentioning how much miracles and everything he performed, and so he did everything from his part, and we just keep questioning.
Cry for wisdom. You know, I'm just hearing Proverbs. You know, wisdom cries in the streets, right? So, you know, cry for wisdom. Look for wisdom. Diligence. Remember I told you when I'm down, and maybe it's accurate, but it's how I feel. I feel like for all the knowledge we have about God, we're sitting there like little baby birds with our mouths open saying, why is nobody feeding me? I'm thinking, look what he's given us. What are you doing with what he's given us? And who are you putting pressure on to say, it's not working? And I'm not telling you that you shouldn't be interacting with the others, that you shouldn't be in discussion with others, that others shouldn't hear what's going on in your soul. We're saying then together we're making use of the provision. When we talk with each other, what in our conversation is showing whether we're praying together with one another, whether we're reminding of his word, whether we're taking it apart and looking at example after example throughout history that he's given us of his faithful works, okay? That there's enough evidence, signs. Cry for wisdom. Seek it. Okay? You getting all these? Good. Okay? Anybody else? Okay? It should remind us that there's more wrong going on. There's more wrong. Let it go, please. Did you let it go? Okay. Okay. Go to the next slide, please. Okay, there you go. It should remind us that there is more wrong going on than what we notice, including our own. You'll cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. The Lord won't answer you in that day. Tick, 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 you're done. Behold, the Lord's hand is not so short it cannot save, his ear so dull that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have made a separation between you and your God. Your sins have hidden his face from you so that he does not hear. You know what this should do for you? Make you amazed that God listens to any sinner. Look at Luke 18 from that perspective. When you're confident you're going to the right place, that wrestling is part of it. You're asking for the right thing. You're going to the right place. But be amazed that God hears any sinner. Learn from Habakkuk. He asked his questions here in faith and trust. Not just angry at God. It includes coming to God, continuing fervently in prayer, even when your faith is shaken. When you're asked, and then when you ask in trust, when you can wrestle in a context of faith, then you can join those asking from heaven. Man. Go to the next one, please. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, will you refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Look at that. They're asking it from heaven. When you can, that's what you're looking for, a holy discontent, a holy coming to God and being persistent as you come before him for whatever his timing is. If God is present and righteous in the face of violence, then the pressure that causes you to scream or fall apart is part of helping your faith to get roots. This wrestling of Habakkuk is part of his being a servant of God. Okay, next one. There's nothing here. Next one. I went to the right place with injustice. There's no action. Because of your inaction, wickedness proliferates. It means it's just spreading. Why do you make me see iniquity? Why do you cause me to look on wickedness? Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contention arises. Go to the next one, please. Why? All right. What do we naturally do when we see strife and contention and conflicting wills? Answer. No, go back one. There's two. Yep, there you go. What do we do naturally when we see strife and contention and conflicting wills? Go ahead. You got a few options. Well, all our personalities in here. What do we do when we see strife, contention, conflicting wills? You can just speak it out. I don't think you have long, drawn-out answers here. What? Take sides. React. Write it. Take sides. React. What do you got?
Run.
Yeah, he said two. Now, come on. What else do you do? Run.
Be discouraged.
There you go. Right? Right? You just put your head in your hands and go, why? Why did I live to see this day? Right? Be discouraged. What'd you say? Try to make peace. Try to make peace. Anything else that we can add to that?
Try to inflict harm.
Try to inflict harm. Off with your head. Off with your head. Right? Now there's nobody left except me. There's peace. Right. Angry. That anger. Anger speaks of love. So anger comes out. It's saying, I have to protect something here. And that's Cindy saying, protect myself or vindicate myself. Protect or vindicate myself. Okay? Okay. Now, here. Here, Ellie. Vindicate. Protect or vindicate myself. Okay? Go to the next one. You can get that later. We're running out of time, so go to the next one. There you go. Why? Why do we do all those things? What motivations or goals or fears are involved with how we respond to strife, contention, and conflicting wills? Just answer that. Why all those things that you said? What motivations or goals or fears are involved? You can't cover them all, so just speak the one that you're thinking. Is that on? All right. He's saying because we have a carnal mind. All right, fleshly, that you see what you see, okay? You see what you see, all right? My kid babysits the neighbor's kid, right? The parents were actually home for Christmas, so that means my kid didn't babysit the neighbor's kid. She goes back there and she goes, the kid doesn't know me anymore, right? So what's the kid saying? Mama, 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 mama. Well, that's good. The kid wants a mama, right? But all right. But so that, how do we respond with strife and contention? All right, we're responding with what we can see. All right, there's your motivations. What else? Where do you got it? Now the mic's, all right, Jim, you're up here. Jody, then it's over here. Was that Dave? No. All right, it's not Dave. Sorry, just doing the hand thing. All right, who? Or Jody, go.
We might want to lift up what we think is right, or maybe discourage, put down what we think is wrong.
Say the discourage part again.
Yeah, discourage or put it down somehow, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lift up what think is right, all right? And put down what's wrong, okay? Very simple, right? Meaning, you've heard that. You've heard it over and over, all the counseling books that we'll recommend. Your emotions are an indicator of what you value. This, I hope you feel happy tomorrow. Be careful. You could be sinning by telling somebody that. You're saying, I hope that your values take place tomorrow. Instead of saying, I hope your values come in line with God's values. And your emotions reflect his values. Right? We got to have to show compassion, right? I'm a sinner, you're a sinner, I change slowly, you change slowly. So not self-righteous and pounding on people, but you're also saying, you got to say, there's something more than people's emotions being set right. That's the shallow part of the movie Inside Out. Is everything is seen through the lens of getting the emotions kind of to work together, okay? I'd rather you read the book over there called Untangling Emotions and realize that underneath the emotions are values. When you respond that way, you are trying, whether you cut off somebody's head, whether you back away and retreat, whether you kill them with kindness, okay? Whatever you're doing, you're trying to lift up what you think is right and put down what you think is wrong. Got anything else? Yeah, go, Rach. Jonathan, is she on? Go. Yeah, I'm sorry. We'll keep
you
on.
We run because we want to protect ourselves.
Okay. All right. I think protect. I think we want it safe. All right? Safety. We're looking for safety for our mind. We're looking for peace, quietness, someplace that's secure. All right? Even with our friendships. And it's not wrong, but you're saying, I want somewhere where I can say what I'm really thinking without paying for it. Okay? Careful. Where is it? Go, Jonathan.
So what Jim mentioned with carnal, this might be a little bit off the question, yeah. But thinking about when you differentiate between saying I'm sorry versus repenting, the problem with I'm sorry is it might only be going so far as I'm sorry about the results, and I'm sorry about how it affected me, rather than actually repenting. And much the same way, when we react to strife, contention, conflicting wills, we're far too often reacting based on the negative effects it has on us, rather than reacting how a righteous a righteous God would react to sin, I guess. I mean, we're not supposed to take the place of God, but but still, we react from our carnal self, like Jim said, and just because of the negative effects it has on us. And there's nothing right there. And then we're just sinning further, rather than, well, fearing God and wanting to see what he values upheld. But as sinners, that's, I feel, something we don't do very rightly often.
That corporate book on prayer, the Nine Marks little book, the orange one, it spends a lot of time going through the Lord's Prayer, the disciples' prayer, all right? Our Father who art in heaven, he's here with you, but there's something larger. He's there. Hallowed, holy is your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth. On earth. If you're not careful, we're trying to help settle disputes. We're trying to find peace for ourselves. We're trying to make it happy for us and our family without ever getting deep enough to reveal our true heart, which is why I'm saying we're denying the gospel in our responses to our trauma. Denying the gospel in responses to the trauma. Often we're not concerned with fearing God and seeing his value. You say, I'm trying to grow in my faith. I'm trying to look to God. Why are you trying to look to God? So you feel better? That's part of it. So that his kingdom interests will take place, because it's all about him. It's all about him, and I am his. Was there somebody else? Okay. If we don't go and evaluate what's behind what we're doing, at best, like Jonathan said, we're saying sorry that I blew up, or sorry that I ran away, sorry that I escaped, without ever getting to the heart of the matter. It's not whether you talk too much or talk too little. It's whether you are talking with the right people at the right time for the right amount of things as you're looking higher, which is what Habakkuk's got to do. He is a prophet, spokesperson for the Lord, and he's going deep with this so that what he talks and acts is in line with what God has called him to do. He says, I can't get away from this. He says, why do you make me see iniquity? Why do you cause me to look? He is forced to stay and see what? See that in our society. That's what bothers me when everybody's like, I got to get out of this church. I got to get away from you. I got to get away. You got to get away from what? Somebody who's going a different direction than you? Yeah, because I know I'm not always right, but who are you looking at YouTube? You don't live with them. You live with us. You live with her. You live with him. You live with them. Habakkuk's forced to deal with the people that he's in turmoil over. Why do you make me see iniquity? You cause me to look on what? There's a couple pairs here of words. You cause me to look at iniquity or wickedness. Iniquity, injustice, depravity, evil, and wrong. Somebody forcing you to view something that's depraved. These words are used numerous times together. Iniquity and wickedness. You see them here in Numbers 23. He has not observed misfortune in Jacob, nor has he seen trouble in Israel. Iniquity and wickedness. Injustice, depravity. Misfortune is the word for iniquity. Trouble and wickedness. This is about Balaam to Balak, the Moabite king. What he's saying is, But Balaam says, I can't curse these people because even though they're not perfect before God, all right, God has he will punish them, but it is not enough to wipe them out or to curse them. God can't bring this misfortune, this trouble into there. Why are you forcing me to look at this iniquity and wickedness? He describes the filth further, the second word pair. Destruction and violence are before me. It's the same pair that you find in Amos 3:10 or Jeremiah 6:7. We're talking about social oppression. The stronger, the selfish against the weaker in society. Think when you think somebody deserves something, but you watch when they finally get it and you go, that was too much. I'm reading Keeping Holiday. See, remember when those kids that caused that trouble for Dylan threw dirt at him? Remember what happened? The police come around the corner. Or no, they smashed the shop owner's window. The policeman comes and just starts beating on him with a stick. And all of a sudden, they wanted the police to come, and then they came. They go, I don't know who to feel sorry for. The shop owner who was yelling at the kids, the policemen who were beating on him, the kids themselves. He's saying something is wrong. Strife and contention is the third word pair. Three word pairs. All right, iniquity and wickedness, destruction and violence, strife and contention. You see this here in Proverbs. The beginning of strife is like letting out water. What happens when you spill it? It just spreads. So abandon the quarrel before it breaks out. We're talking about strife that spreads. You devour, you blame one another. Think about Galatians 5, opposite of the fruit of the Spirit. When you bite and devour one another, be careful you're not consumed by one another. James 3, wisdom that comes from below is filled with, like you said, the carnal mind, is filled with bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. It's earthly, natural, demonic. Disorder and every evil thing accompany that wisdom, the worldly wisdom. Strife is the word for lawsuits, going to court against each other. You denounce one another to the authorities. Habakkuk saying, God, it's too much. Because you don't seem to be acting, wickedness just keeps spreading. There's no stopping. It's like living in the middle of the city with the police unable to keep up. Punish the wickedness. Don't let it continue. If you are numb to injustices around you, you're not desiring to right wrongs, or you're seeking to escape because it's too big or you're afraid of doing it wrong, you're part of the problem. Hence the commands in the Bible to seek justice, help those suffering under injustice. We're not going to answer this question tonight. But what does an eternal perspective on wickedness spreading around you and righting wrongs, what does it also include? That's where we're going to come back as we start here next week. We're going to go look at Psalm 22, 1 to 11, if you remember that, or you can find the notes online. Psalm 130, let's sing.